Are we back?
We're back.
What do you mean we're in the future?
October 21st, 2015.
Marty, we're going to be able to see our wedding.
Wow. The future. I got to check this out, Doc.
Look what happened to your son.
He's a complete wimp.
Don't talk to anyone.
You've been looking, Bob!
Hey, look!
Don't touch anything.
I need to borrow your hoverboard.
Come on! And try not to look at anything. I didn't invent the time machine to win at gambling.
I can't lose.
I invented the time machine to travel through time.
Hey, Doc, I'm all for that. What's wrong with making a few bucks on the side?
Now,
the time continuum has been disrupted, creating an alternate 1985.
There have been a few changes.
It's like we're in hell or something.
No, it's Hill Valley, although I can't imagine hell being much worse.
But they'll all be back.
Eat less, slackers!
Biff?
Hello? Hello, anybody home?
Mom, that can't be you. You're so big.
Hello and welcome to OSW Review, wrestling's first and therefore best video podcast. We bring it live from the 80s, brought to you in glorious grapple vision. Ladies and gentlemen, bow your heads. This is the last WWF pay-per-view appearance of the Killer Bees. This is WrestleMania 4.
Away here in Atlantic City. Hello, everyone. I'm Gorilla Monsoon along with Jesse, the star, Ventura, here for WrestleMania 4, the video cassette.
All right, welcome to OSW Review, coming to you with episode 8 with your host Jay Hunter here with V1.
How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. On our own again. There's some kind of Simon Garfunkel song about it.
Nice.
That's probably on the road again.
Or that song off. Often had for a Camry stroller.
Just us two tonight, so we got WrestleMania 4, March 27, 1988, from the Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Well, I'm watching the Silver Vision version. You watch WWE?
Yeah, I watch the WWE.
Anthology.
The Anthology version, yeah. About 3 hours 40.
Oh, really? Okay, that's 3:46. So maybe I got something you didn't. Alright, we start off the first ever pay-per-view opening vignette, where we get like crash cuts between people at the beach and wrestlers, kind of with a black background. Do you get that? It starts.
What I do remember though was where the fuck was my sex jazz music? It was gone. However, they'd replaced it with what to me sounded like Top Gun music, and this intro with like a jet flying or something through across water. I just saw the Top Gun.
Was this before the America the Beautiful?
Yes.
Oh wow! So maybe we just got different openings.
Yeah, because I definitely had no one on a beach like.
Yeah. Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Star Ventura lead us into 1988's version of WWE Access, including a meet and greet, a fun run. And then we go to WWF's Mountain Range block logo entrance.
Yeah, that's what I got. So I think I missed out on the whole proper intro.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Soft pitch.
WWF, what the world is watching.
It's like, this is Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn's first foray into producing it as a TV program. Mean Gene welcomes us to WrestleMania and introduces Gladys Knight, who sings America the Beautiful. And we get the standard...
propaganda.
Yeah, America signs, flags.
Did you notice that Gladys Knight had a lot of ads on her jacket? She looked like a Formula One car. It was really ridiculous.
Pretty sure there's a pun in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd say she was definitely glad for the extra bit of money. Oh, God!
Was she having a great night? Alright, so our first match is a 20-man invitational battle royal, with the winner getting a tall trophy, which will definitely not be smashed.
Yeah, it was an awesome-looking trophy. This looks like it was real.
Ventura says he's happy to be with Monsoon and not Vince, whom he gives shit to throughout the pay-per-view.
I loved it. It was great. You know, I've gone out of my way to say that I didn't like Monsoon's commentary, but he's JR when, you know, after listening to Vince last week. Vince is awful.
Bob Uecker is back, and I know it's just with Monsoon, then Ventura, then Bob Uecker. It's like three different shades of orange.
Bob Uecker looks like he had a real bad problem with the bottle. Like his face is maroon.
So we got 20 people from the roster who weren't good enough to make the top 14 in the single elimination WWF title tournament. So we got Heart Foundation, Young Stallions, Sika, Dangerous Danny Davis, The Killer Bees, Bad News Brown, your boy Sam Houston.
Oh yeah.
The Rougeos, Ken Patera, Ron Bass, JYD, The Bolsheviks, Hillbilly Jim, King Harley Race, and George Steele, who starts from the outside.
Yeah, because it's a reverse battle royale. You've got to make your way into the ring, yeah, you know?
And then get your haircut, like.
And then get your haircut.
Actually, speaking of that, how did the bees style their hair? Would you say they used a honeycomb?
Oh, God.
Okay, Sam Houston is first out. Steele pulls out the anvil.
I think that's my most despised spot in battle royals or Royal Rumble history. When someone who's either just being thrown over the top rope or who's not part of the match at all pulls out an active member of the match.
Yeah.
Having none of that. It pisses me off.
Didn't that was done at WrestleMania 2, wasn't it, with Big John Studd? Didn't the...
The fucking... The football fridge diggers, guy. Yeah. The freezer. No, the...
The fridge freezer.
Yeah,
he taped with Glacius.
It's amazing. The fridge freezer. With his fucking G-string.
God. In attendance, there were over 18,000 people at this event. As Monsoon noticed, actually thousands were turned away. It was true.
Really?
Yeah. The crowds literally swarmed the theatre. Okay, I'm done. See, they're actually out very quickly in the match, so I mean,
what are we going to do when these guys are gone?
Gonna make puns out of someone else's name.
Yeah, fair enough.
I noticed Steele never got in. Romo dumps a dangerous Danny Davis. There's no real spots in the match. There's just things happening.
Totally. The action was so quick that neither the commentary team or the cameras could actually keep up. I have my list of, you know, what order people went out and who threw them out. And some point around halfway through, I just lose track. Yeah, I thought that this match was really shit. There was nobody, you know, nearly getting thrown out or, you know, kind of heart and mouth moments. It was punch, 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 throw you over the top, miss a few, go back and do it again.
Yeah. Race tries headbutting JYD and it doesn't work. He should know better. JYD eliminates Race and then we're down to the final four, which is Bad News, JYD, The Hitman and Jim Powers. Bad News Brown eliminates Powers and then we get a dog headbutt spot. The heels team up on JYD and it works.
The only spot in this entire match was Bad News Brown and Bret Hart teaming up on Jim Dead Dog.
JYD headbutts Bad News Brown. And have you ever wondered what it was like when a face headbutts a heel? Anyway, the face with the gimmick of the headbutt wins. Okay, so we get a ghetto blaster, which is an insecurity, to Hitman, which is Bad News Brown's finisher, and dumps him out, and Bad News Brown is your winner and gets the trophy.
The ghetto blaster was actually the name of his move.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool? Giving away what decade this was going to be, definitely.
It was a really weird ending, very real ending. None of that fake stuff at the very end, you know, the high tension thing. It was just, no, you're out, that's it.
Get out, like.
Brett gets back in and dropkicks Bad News Brown out and destroys the trophy. I thought it was hilarious because he was destroying this trophy and he'd stomp it, but he'd wrestler stomp it. So he kayfabe stomp it, which means jumping up and making a noise with your foot when you stomp, to no avail, so it just pulls it apart.
Damn right, because, you know, those people in Row Z, you've got to see what you're doing, you know?
God. I thought quite a nice singles push here for Brett.
Yeah, it was pretty much the only thing in this match that did anything to forward anyone's character.
Bad News Brown, or Bad News Allen, he's from Stu Hart's Dungeon and worked in Japan and Florida before coming in.
Bad News Brown is supposed to be one of the real kind of hard men in the history of the business, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody fucks around with this
That's
guy,
true.
Right?
So we got Euchre, who goes on the lookout for Vanna White.
Was her name Vanna or Vanna?
Okay, well, some people said Vanna.
I've it written down as Vanna, but
I refuse to look it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Any excuse to get Euchre off commentary is good in my book.
Euchre kind of looked like he was having fun being there and blah blah blah, but his comedy was so bad. You're like, Jesus Christ!
I'm sure Vince loved his commentary.
Yes,
his comedy.
Absolutely, because Vince loves baseball, right?
Yep. But I don't understand why he had to have a storyline for being a backstage interviewer. Cut to the Million Dollar Man with Virgil for a promo, which I found was a bit meh, where he runs down Duggan.
I don't think I actually had that.
Really?
Yeah.
What was cool about being in the Trump Plaza Hotel is that all these backstage interviews, they were like from their hotel room, so it would look much more upscale than it would with, you know, the
curtain.
The lime blue locker room.
Like. Yeah.
Back to ringside, Fink introduces Robin Leach. From
just the English dude, wasn't
yeah,
it?
From Lifestyles of Rich and Famous.
No idea who this guy was.
He explains at verbose length that the WrestleMania 4 tournament is for the WWF Championship. He does such a great job, Ventura and Monsoon have to immediately actually explain the rules.
And the fans hated this.
Mm.
They were not happy, neither was I.
Last time on OSW Review, we saw the Royal Rumble, where we saw the WWF title contract signing with Hogan and Andre, and the match took place at Friday night's main event on February 5th, 1988. We saw the Hebners twin magic as evil Earl Hebner screwjob Hogan out of the title. Andre held it for 127 seconds, then gave the belt to DiBiase. So there's actually a week where DiBiase went around house shows with the WWF title. A week later on Superstars, DiBiase was stripped by President Jack Tunney, who said the title will be declared vacant and a new champion to be decided in a 40-man tournament at WrestleMania 4.
That's bollocks, though. The problem with having a 14-man thing is that it means that you have to have more buys in the second round.
It's just to make Hogan and Andre wrestle one less match, so they have an advantage. One of them should be champion, so instead of that, here's a little saving grace, though.
I still think it's bollocks. No, sorry.
Well,
having none of them.
It's just not fair.
I suppose it's not fair that neither one of them is champion. I suppose it would have been fair if they just had to wrestle again or resume the match or something. No? None of it? All right. No. Alright, first round match. We got Jim Duggan versus the Million Dollar Man with Virgil and Andre. Monsoon explains that we can hear Duggan's yo's.
He worked for the company. He doesn't know why. He could have just asked him.
Asked him? Asked him. Jesus.
It's like when they had that, Mr. Burns had the fake Homer and he's like, bow.
Nice. Neither man got any music for his entrance.
Only certain people had music in this pay-per-view.
It was really, really strange. Ted DiBiase, he sold moves really, really well. His diving fist drop looked great.
Million Dollar Man, he was generally in control, but really a nothing match, you know?
Yeah.
So the finish is where Duggan goes for the three-point stance. Andre trips him up and also punches him in the face while Million Dollar Man knees him in the back. No DQ, what's going on here? And Million Dollar Man gets the three and advances.
I thought the best part of this match actually was Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon talking about what will happen if Ted meets Andre in the semis or final. Either Andre will just batter him and take the title, or Andre will lay down for him. And it was just really, really great commentary.
Oh, good storytelling as well.
Other than that, though, the match was nothing special.
Mm.
It was short. After this match then, we had Mean Gene interviewing Brutus Beefcake before his Intercontinental match with the Honky Tonk Man. Beaver came in wearing a great shocking pink getup, and Mean Gene opens up his interview by looking at his balls and saying, "What a package." I do want the clip of this spliced in. Other than that, promo was decent enough. Thankfully he wasn't wearing those leopard prints, because by WrestleMania 4, they'd just have been hot pants. Like, they were ridiculous.
What a package.
So we got another first round match, which is Dino Bravo with Frenchie Martin versus Don Morocco with superstar Billy Graham. Don Morocco coming out to Jesus Christ Superstar.
As you can bet that DiBiase will be watching.
What was this bet? I saw this and I immediately thought, like, Spartacus. Ridiculous music. It didn't sound plausible for any man past the year 1080. It just didn't sound right. Dino Bravo seemed to look younger than before. Crazy looking.
Commentators talk about Ventura cheating with Bravo's world bench press attempts at the Royal Rumble 88.
Jesse states that, no, I only put 2 pounds of pressure on the bar, which meant that he was still technically lifting 713 pounds, so it's therefore still an official world record.
Brilliant.
Was fucking great.
Bravo gets a gut wrench, and then a pile driver, and then he tries for a second one, but it's countered.
Morocco looked noticeably smaller than what he did at Survivor Series 87. Don't get me wrong, he's still monstrous, but he looked like he was on an off cycle at the moment, allegedly. Just before you go on, I'd like to take this time out to officially apologise to one Ted Arcidi.
The world's strongest man.
The world's most average man, as I said. And before I found out that, remember the record, Dino Bravo was going to beat the 705 pounds? Mm. That was, at that time, held by one Mr. Arcidi.
Really?
Yeah.
He's actually the world's strongest man.
He was, at that point, he held the world record for a single bench press.
He's serious?
Yeah, yeah. An actual world record for a bench press.
Wow.
Yeah, 705 pounds back in 88. It's now well over 1,000 pounds. Mm.
Morocco gets a flying forearm. He tries it again, and Bravo pulls the ref in the way. He does this much less impressive sidewalk slam. He goes for the pin, but gets DQ'd when the ref revives. So the real winner between the gas monkeys is the one that doesn't have to wrestle again.
Or you can say us.
Don Morocco wins via DQ.
I thought this match was better than it had any right to be. I was expecting awful. and I got merely bad. So it's a positive.
It's a win. It's a big W.
However, I was shocked at how quick Araka was. He moved around pretty quickly.
That's true. That's true.
So, meh, yeah, decent enough.
So from his hotel room, we get an interview with Ricky Steamboat, his son Richie, and his wife. And he says that 1988 is the year of the dragon, which it actually is. And he just puts over his son. And it's all about him, you know?
We put the belt on him.
So we cut to Bob Uecker with Jimmy Hart and the Honky Tonk Man. Pretty nothing promo.
Yeah. I actually thought this was probably Uecker's best part of this whole night. He was at his least grating. And Honky's fucking awesome. I love him.
You love Honky.
Me and Jason Agnew. Yeah.
Alright, so another first round match. We've got Greg Valentine versus Ricky Steamboat, who comes out with Little Dragon, Richie Steamboat, and they paid for the Alan Parsons song.
Not on my version.
No, that's a shame.
I was really angry because he still had his cover version. However, can I just... coming out with your newborn son, the greatest babyface move in the history of the business. I marked out for it. I know it's cheesy and some of them might hate it. I thought this is the ultimate... baby face move.
Plus he had
and 80s move.
And he had a baby's version of his attire as well.
It's like more of a combat, like, babe energy.
Monsoon calls the steamer the excellence of execution. Maybe it was just the same before Bret Hart took it. Ventura says Valentine can't out-wrestle Steamer, so he should cheat.
Of course he can't, and he didn't even get a fucking entrance. Like, this is a papers mania, and he got no entrance.
First half of the whole match was just a sequence then an armbar, sequence then an armbar, which I hated.
It was pretty much the same as last month's match, just take out Rick Rude and stick in Valentine. I think Steamboat is probably the best opening spot guy I've ever seen in wrestling. Just, he comes out so quick and so smooth.
We get tree chops and a timber spot with Valentine. And, you know, it's like you take a bump and then he'll wobble for a bit and fall down.
Yeah, the flare flop.
Well, a flare walks a bit and then pops on his face. Valentine stays in the one spot, wobbles, and then falls on his face.
Did you notice that he did it four times in about a minute?
He did. I actually, had it down two.
Same here, down and then three, and then four. Down. Yeah.
A final tally at six.
In this match?
Yeah.
Or
no, oh, in God. This match.
Because he did it in all the match. Oh, God. Yeah.
I figure, is that just how he bumps? Every bump is a timber spot. Like, he can't take a normal bump. Pisses me off.
Maybe.
That's Punch and Judy shit.
I'd like to watch some older, maybe some NWA stuff from him and see, you know, if he'd moved on to doing it because of back problems or something. Valentine technically wasn't a bad wrestler. He had a lot of moves, but he's so slow and he's devoid of any character or you know,
charisma.
Anger or charisma. You know, it's just, he's so bland to watch, like. But he doesn't botch, and he doesn't fuck up, so.
That's true. Hard to botch when you're going at 0 miles per hour.
That's true.
Any slower, and I'll start going backwards.
Highlight of this match for me, actually, was Valentine did an atomic drop, and then nearly took off Dragon's head with a beautiful clothesline.
So we get a turnbuckle spot. The hammer reverses a top rope crossbody and gets to three. So how do you like that? The guy without an entrance wins the match.
I was beyond shocked. If you had any sense at all, you'd have booked a rematch between the Dragon and Macho Man.
Would it change your opinion if I told you that this was the last WWF pay-per-view for Steamer? Because by the end of the year, he'd be in JCP, taking on Ric Flair.
Really? Okay, I didn't know that.
He was on Vince's shit list for dropping the IC belt during the summer.
Oh, you were saying this last time to spend time with his wife and newborn kid, was it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's what you get for putting family ahead of your work.
Unbelievable. To be honest with you, this was Ricky Dragon's second match that we watched in a row that was pretty poor.
Because
his last match at Rick Rude wasn't very good either. He was probably waltzing his way through his match to get it done and not get hurt because he knew he was going to draw some money with Flair later.
Alright, so we go to a shot of Donald Trump, who's on the hard camera front row, by the way. Then we cut to Mean Gene backstage with the Bulldogs, with Matilda returned and Coco Beware.
I thought this was a very good interview segment with the lads talking about how the dog is trained to hunt out weasels, and I thought Matilda was really cute. I thought she was a cool dog.
Dynamite was a poor promo. He fluffed his lines.
Yeah, he wasn't very good.
Mm. Then we cut to Bobby Heenan's hotel room where he gets a special delivery, which
Son
he won't show
of a
us.
Bitch, I don't have this.
Interesting.
This is the first time ever.
This is great. I love it. All right, so we've got a first round match with Slick Rick in the ring with Butch Reed versus Randy Savage with Liz.
Another wrestler that didn't get an entrance. He's back wearing his Hogan jocks again, his yellow getup. Butch Reed's music. It was awful.
No, what was it? It wasn't Slick's music, was it?
It could
the Jive Soul, bro?
Yeah,
it's probably Slick's music.
Yeah.
Very sad. You're coming out to your manager's music?
Yeah, holy shit.
Alright, so the cameraman, he's always looking down Liz's dress.
She was lovely in this show. She was really pretty.
Mm-hmm. And she was dressed up to nines as well.
Yeah.
Butch Reed goes to the top as he chats up Liz. Macho slams him off and then gets the elbow drop and the three. So Macho makes quick work of Reed.
This match sucks, and it was not Randy's fault.
Mm. This is Butch Reed's final WWF pay-per-view appearance as well. He went to the NWA with Ron Simmons and formed Doom. So we get an interview with Euchre with Bobby Heenan and the Islanders. So I know Heenan's gotten dressed really quick because he was back in his dressing room in his normal gear just
in
before the match.
Hotel.
Like, yeah, in the 4 minutes ago. Like. Euchre's trying, but I hate his terrible jokes in comedy.
This was a bad segment. It didn't make any sense either. Not funny. Didn't get anyone over.
So we've got two more first round matches to go. So we got One Man Gang with Slick versus Bam Bam Bigelow with Sir Oliver Humperdinck. So Ventura calls them the Ugly Twins. And
I didn't hear that, but I've actually made a note that these two lads made me think of the two fat lads on the mopeds. You know that famous picture?
Yeah. Are you a surprise witnesses? We got the lowest splash ever from Bam Bam. I thought it was hilarious. He must have gotten about 2 inches off the ground. The commentators agree that both will be gassed if the match lasts longer than 5 minutes, which I thought was hilarious. Bam Bam's in control until Slick pulls the top rope down and Bam Bam gets out. And then we get one of the fastest 10 counts in history.
Yeah.
When Bam Bam does get back in at 4, like, he was back up on the apron at 4, and then One Man Gang started beating him up. So does that not stop the count? Apparently it doesn't.
No, no. Wrestling logic, if you're at an 8 count and you get up on the apron and say Edge hits a spear and you fall back down, I'm sure the ref is still going to keep counting.
I think because you're impeding him coming back into the ring, so I think that should null and void the count.
To get this damn rule book again.
No, I'm serious, this happens all the time. When he came in, did you see the worst cartwheel in history?
Thank God. A cartwheel followed by a clap. I pissed myself laughing. And what's even better was that the yearly WrestleMania tradition of sex jazz music was bestowed upon Bam Bam Bigelow.
Really? Well, yeah. I don't remember any.
Kind of marked out to that.
It's really odd because at the Survivor Series, he got a massive push.
Yeah, massive push, really
over.
There's
a lot of guy out.
How much damage can you do in 6 weeks?
He did nothing in the Royal Rumble, and now he's being jobbed out pretty easy here.
Yeah.
You know? Bam Bam, he's done with the WWF now. So he goes to...
This was his last match as well?
Yeah.
Wow.
Went to Jim Crockett and then on to New Japan where he tagged with Vader.
If Vince knew all of these guys were leaving, why didn't he pin them clean?
I don't know. Like, if you brought him in, would you not sign him for a few years?
Yeah.
And not 8 months? So it's very odd.
Was his first match at the series?
Yeah, that was his first pay-per-view match.
Oh, and his last match was 6 months later?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll see you for the immortal 1993 year in review. Mean Gene backstage with Hogan, where he plays up the non-existent controversy at WrestleMania 3, then goes into an amazing promo about Trump having to doggy paddle.
This was the best part of this show by a fucking mile.
All right, over the last couple of months, it has been very difficult for me to introduce this man without using World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan here at WrestleMania 4 this afternoon. You've got the opportunity to change that.
Oh, yeah, it's been hard to live with, man. Fee-fi-fo, Fum Andre. One long year, and your time has come, man. No marks, no scars, no blemishes on the Hulkster, brother. But inside, man, I've been scarred for one long year. Everywhere I go, man, all the little Hulksters ask me, is there any truth to the fact that there was a controversial count? Hulkster, did you really get him over your head? Did you really beat the Giants? Well, today, man, in WrestleMania 4, we're going to wipe all that controversy out. Andre the Giant, in the second round, when you're fresh as a daisy, with the whole world watching, I'm going to prove, brother, that I can beat you anywhere, anytime. And all my Hulkamaniacs, they're going to feel it, too.
Speaking of the Hulkamaniacs, Hulk Hogan, we have seen him here at Atlantic City, and I know millions others are watching very intently all around the world.
But if you looked in their eyes, man, have you seen the fear in all those little Hulksters? They realize that when I get Andre the Giant cinched up in the launch position, when I slam him through the Trump Plaza, brother, from New York down to Tampa, Florida, the fault line is going to break off. And as Andre the Giant falls into the ocean, as my next two opponents fall to the ocean floor and I pin them, so will Donald Trump and all the Hulkamaniacs. But as Donald Trump hangs onto the top of the Trump Plaza with his family under his other arm, as they sink to the bottom of the sea, thank God Donald Trump's a Hulkamaniac. He'll know enough to let go of his materialistic possessions, hang on to the wife and kids, dog paddle with his life all the way to safety. But Donald, if something happens, you run out of gas, and all those little Hulkamaniacs run out of gas, just hang on to the largest back in the world, and I'll dog paddle us, backstroke all of us to safety.
Oh, and thank you, Hulk Hogan. Let's get back to action. Wow.
So we got the final first round matchup with Rick Rude with Bobby Heenan versus Jake the Snake Roberts. So Rude's got the theme. He's got his heel promo style gimmick down that we all know and love. Awesome.
Not as awesome as his tights. They were amazing. He's got a picture of a girl's face on his arse.
It's brilliant. Yeah, it was awesome.
Did you hear his promo that he cut prior to taking off the road?
The music.
Oh, what is this?
You know, I'd like to let all you little boys know you're taking the gamble of your life, letting your ladies see my ravishing body. So keep the noise down while I take my robe off right here in Atlantic City and show the whole world why the odds are in my favorite. You hit the music.
Great character.
I know it was not a great pop for Jake when he came out.
Yeah.
Extremely subdued.
I've actually got that written down there. There were like literally no DDT chance during this match. And it was like 6 weeks earlier and the 2 months before that. And like the crowd were absolutely mental for this guy. So I'd love to know what happened in those few weeks.
So there was a great spot where Rude gets knocked into Damien's corner, but he doesn't realise it. And then he gets knocked into it again. And then he does and he wigs out.
Oh.
And there's an endless arm ringer by Jake Roberts.
He works over the arm for about 10 minutes and then stops and then slaps on a chin lock for about another 5 minutes. So I am really bored.
Yeah, this is a disappointing match between two, you know, everyone loves these characters and remembers them so fondly and remember them as great wrestlers, but holy shit, this was just boring.
I'm pretty much in the same boat. This is Rude's second really bad match in a row, and with two that are considered kind of greats, like Roberts and Dragon. I don't know, maybe Rude's not as good as Rose into memories would have you believe.
Well, he's a noob at this point.
Okay, so. You know, because his character is there, and it's all awesome, but just if he's a noob, then why is he thrown out in the 15-minute time limit drop?
I have no idea.
It makes no sense.
I think they were just like, get as much wrestling
why
as you can.
Why not have this guy have the countout after a minute?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. If he can't handle a 15-minute match, he shouldn't be given it. So the story of the match is Rude escapes the DDT. It goes to a 15-minute time limit draw, meaning, oh my god, gets a bye. The fucking...
to which he says, oh my god.
Yeah. This was just, yeah, the worst, longest, slowest match on the
really
card.
Bad.
Like,
really
at least
bad.
These other matches are under 5 minutes long. This one, 15-15. All right, you've got Mean Gene with Vanna White.
Or Vanna White.
The letter turner from the Wheel of Fortune, showing the tournament brackets as Gene runs down the matchups. I thought it would have been great if they had letters for her to turn.
Oh, not even letters,
the nameplate.
The nameplate would turn, that would be great.
Surprised Vince didn't do that. That'd be all over that shit.
Yeah, I thought she was pretty hot, got a rocking body. However, she was dressed like a prostitute.
That's true, leopard skin.
Yeah. Mean Gene asks her who she's going to pick for the tournament, and she picks Hulk Hogan because she said she met him and he's lovely.
To think that was a shoot comment. Like,
yeah, no, like,
he seems like a great coach.
Yeah, you know, like, imagine if, you know, Mean Gene said, so, Van, who's your pick for this great tournament for the prestigious WWF World title? I think I'll pick Ted DiBiase because he's lovely.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I mean? Or Andre because he's so gentle.
Good thing these are pre-tapes then, aren't they? Okay, so we got a match that isn't in the tournament. Let's see a few of these throughout the night. We got Hercules versus the Ultimate Warrior. Yeah, good luck, Hercules.
Yeah.
So Warrior comes out from the new entranceway, which is on the hard camera. So, you know, so there's actually two entrances.
I did not.
There's one that's just on ground level coming from the side of the ring.
Yeah.
And there's one that's against the hard camera underneath the big WWF sign where you come down through the fans.
Oh.
It's awesome.
So,
you didn't get an entrance, but your opponent got a new entrance.
Yeah.
True the crowd, you're fucked, mate. So, Warrior no-sells and dominates to start us off.
He batters him, doesn't he?
But Hercules gets back into it, and Herc applies the full Nelson, but can't lock the fingers.
He's stiff, Warrior, with a nasty-looking elbow.
Warrior powers backwards, and both kind of go down. So both have their shoulders down, and the ref says Warrior got his shoulders up at three, and so he gets the win.
On first time watching this, I had no idea what was going on. I thought it was a massive botch. And then I rewound it and watched it again, and I totally got what they did. I thought it was a great ending. You know, they probably should have used it in a better match, but I thought that this finish was great.
Because Hercules is winding down and Warrior's on the way up, so why wouldn't you just steamroll him?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's... seems to be a bit of a pattern on this show.
Yeah, yeah.
Really nice.
One thing that is beginning to grate on me is there's a lot of, you think this guy won, oh no, the other guy won.
Oh no, he didn't.
Fuck's sake.
Punch and Judy shit, yeah.
There's a lot of, see, we don't get that anymore, where there's a long time between the bell ringing and then Fink telling us who won.
I suppose it's better than WrestleMania 2, where they let it go so long that they just have one guy commentating who won the last match as someone else from a different city is announcing the next guy.
Alright, so we get a video montage of the history of Hogan versus Andre. I bet you Ook will hate this because there's no narration and it's even shorter splices than it was at like Mania 3.
To me, this made absolute perfect 100% because I've seen all of these shows.
Yeah, yeah. But
and
if you
I
didn't...
that's a great problem.
Imagine if you didn't, you'd have
yeah,
no idea.
You'd have no idea. Yeah.
So we start the second round, or the quarterfinals, if you like, where we got Andre the Giant with the Million Dollar Man and Virgil versus Hulk Hogan. So just prior to WrestleMania 4, the Million Dollar Man bought the managerial rights to Andre the Giant. Hogan comes in the ring with the Billy Gunn sliding. Did you like that? Billy Gunn runs the ring, jumps under the bottom rope and kind of slides into the ring.
Oh, okay.
There's one where it's so amazing, he slides all the way in, but he's going so fast that he actually hits the other rope on the other side.
Billy Gunn?
Yeah.
Billy
really?
Gunn. Yeah. By the way, fans went fucking mental for Hogan and his entrance.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely the highest point of fans so far to the show.
Yeah. There was an odd sequence which might be a blown spot where Hogan is like punching Andre, but he stops. And then Andre goes to one knee and then down. It's really weird.
Yeah, yeah. And this came about 10 seconds after Monsoon was banging on about Hogan can't take Andre off his feet.
Mm.
And he did it without doing a move.
Hogan was like going to bounce off the ropes and then he stops and then Andre goes down himself.
Maybe this has something to do with looked like he lost weight and a bit more mobile. But after about a minute, he was gone. Like, Hogan had to take over. And from that point, it was pretty much it. Like,
yeah, we get a long choke trapezius squeeze spot.
Oh, God, yeah.
So the finish of the match is where Virgil distracts the ref as a Million Dollar Man hits Hogan with a chair. Hogan no-sells it, hits Andre with the chair in front of the ref. No DQ, by the way. And Andre returns the favour. And then finally, the bell is rung. And the commentators are left to tell us that they've both been DQ'd.
Yeah. I'd imagine if you were there live, you wouldn't have a clue what was going on. It looked like Hogan should have been DQ'd.
Yeah, since when there's a chair shot to the head, not DQ'd,
yeah,
in front of the ref? Bullshit.
This is my destiny.
So yeah, I thought this was a lame finish to WrestleMania 3 story, because they've been building this up, trying to hype up fake controversy.
And was this the finish to the story?
Well, they'll still feud, but as far as them singles, no, that's it.
Wow.
Like, you've had two shots at it now. I can imagine you really? No, I'm thinking of for the actual payoff to this, you know, end of the feud we've had. There's a bit at Survivor Series, and then nothing at the Rumble, and then the main event there in February. That was going to be the payoff, but I can understand if you got Mania so close, say WrestleMania.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
You had this match, and then nothing. This is the shit finish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how'd you like that? Hogan slams Andre to no fanfare.
He just picked him up and does it, and the commentators didn't even mention it. You know, it was like it meant nothing now, because he'd already done it. It's like John Cena giving the Big Show the FU. It means nothing now because he's done it 25 times. Like, each time you do it, it should mean less.
Yeah, Hogan slamming Andre to little fanfare, just like at Shea Stadium in 1980. But that was okay, because Hogan wasn't a big name, and he was the heel, so...
That was 1980, show. Wow.
Alright, sorry.
Sorry, post-match, Hogan chases after Virgil and hits him with a suplex to the outside that... Clearly, neither man wanted to do, because neither took a bump. It looked really bad, because Virgil clearly wanted to land on his feet rather than his back onto the concrete. And Hogan didn't even take a bump from it, so it looked more like Andre's awful-looking suplex.
Hogan spends longer posing afterwards than the entire match.
Yes, he does.
And it was awful match, but I was happy to see Hulk out of the tournament.
Yeah, this match was awful, okay? But I thought that the booking was really brave, because what it basically meant was that you're guaranteed a brand new champion. So, you know, you've got at least some form of payoff.
Yeah.
Why would Hogan celebrate for so long? Should he not be really angry because he knows he's not going to be champion? Should he not be battering people or crying or something?
Yeah. It's like, oh, what do you mean I can't celebrate at the end of the night? All right, well, compromise. I'll do it in the middle of the show.
Yeah. And Jesse the Body has a great line where... He says he loves watching Hulk Hogan celebrate with no title around his face. Oh, that was great.
That's great. Do you know why Hogan didn't win this tournament? It's because he needed to take time off to film No Holds Barred.
Really?
Yeah. So if he didn't have this film career, he would have won this. That's mixed booking A, actually. That's the first time. Happens again later in the night, I'll tell you about it. Alright, so we get an interview with Mean Gene. It's Macho Man and Liz, who have changed from their blue outfits, now they're in pink.
Mm-hmm.
He says Hogan was cheated, but he's going to win the tournament.
He spent a good bit of time kind of praising Hogan.
Yeah, it's important they got over their friendship in this place.
Yeah, which is true. And then he goes on to talk about taking it all and winning it, and Liz actually talks. So...
No, she talked all the time.
She fucking talks, like...
Second round match, we got Don Morocco, Jesus Christ Superstar, versus Ted DiBiase, who Virgil was not at ringside since Hogan beat him up, nor is Andre, who had just wrestled. So Morocco starts off strong, he is knackered.
Yes, both men during their second match look absolutely bollocks. Morocco kicks off the match like a mentler. Basically, he goes mad, completely gasses out. Jesse the Body moans about how he attacked Ted DiBiase before the bell rang, so I thought that was a nice touch. Morocco controls the match for the majority of the time. There's a really badly botched slingshot spot by Ted DiBiase into the turnbuckle, and it's like they kind of paused, and then he just jumped over the top rope. It looked really bad. And then there's the hot shot win. I thought this match was pretty bad.
Yeah, both of them look pretty knackered. DiBiase gets Morocco in a hot shot, and then gets the 3, and thanks to Andre and Hogan getting a double DQ, he's in the finals. Alright, so we go to an interview with Demolition with Mr. Fuji. First thing I noticed is, my god, they are so old. Are both of you must be 40.
Yeah.
And this is your debut in the WWE.
This was a bizarre little promo piece. They talk about baseball, and then they move on to start talking about Strike Force, and then they start talking about geese. That's really bizarre. This is probably the worst promo in the whole show. Huger's comedy was fucking horrific at this point.
Alright, so One Man Gang with Slick is in the ring, and Fink tells us that since Jake and Root were both out thanks to a time limit draw, One Man Gang is true to the semi-finals to face the winner of the next match. Thought that was a brilliant idea.
Good idea, yeah. They could have done that with Morocco or something.
They should have had a big tournament board all night. would have been great.
Yeah.
Just have a
kind of like what they did with King of the Ring 94, right? They had a massive board out in, like...
They did, yeah, yeah. Very good. Yeah. Okay, so we got another second round match. We got Macho Man with Liz versus Greg Valentine. So, no entrance for Valentine. So, I thought this was quite a short, forgettable match. Valentine sneaks in a timber spot, which you'd love.
Oh, state of Hammer's hair.
Stop.
Hammer hair. It's fucking awful. He also needs knee pads or elbow pads to break up his horrible body as well. I thought that Hammer looked notably better in this match, which I'm pulling down to Magic because he was so great. This match, he pretty much only did elbows.
Alright, so the finish of the match is where Macho reverses a figure four attempt into a small package 4-3. And so we get a clean finish and nobody looks bad.
Yeah, I thought this match was pretty decent. Not great, but, you know, definitely watchable.
Yeah.
On a curve with this match, it's fucking forced.
This whole pay-per-view is bit stinking, like,
oh,
you know?
Yeah.
All right, so we've got Mean Gene with Banner. Is it Banner, right, is it?
Keep calling her Banner, it's great.
Bruce Banner White. Like. Baina White.
Nice.
Never mind. Okay, so Mean Gene with Banner White. They run down the tournament brackets. Someone should tell Bob Uecker where she is, because his gimmick is that, oh, where is Banna White, where is Banna White?
She had no idea who he was. No idea. They mentioned him, and she's like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, it's like, yeah, he's only the guy who wants to rape you.
I remembered your name. Alright, so the finals are DiBiase versus the winner of Savage and One Man Gang. Alright, so next we've got another non-tournament match. This is the Intercontinental Championship match with Honky Tonk Man coming out with Jimmy Hart and Peggy Sue versus Bruiser's Beefcake with no theme.
Yeah, what's that all about? Honky's entrance was great. I love this guy. I really do. I really love
He's got such an awesome gimmick.
Yeah.
And you can tell he loves it.
It's so strong. And it's like, I get the impression it's not that much of a stretch from him. Like, did you notice that when he was coming out, someone had a Kenny Rogers poster?
No.
So, coward of the county. Like, my man's a huge Kenny Rogers
really?
Fan.
Really? So, yeah, Peggy Sue had a terrible fake blonde wig on.
Yeah, nice tits though.
Did you know who she is?
No idea.
Alright, because we get a close-up of Peggy Sue's face. You know, although she's wearing the big glasses. Like, oh, it's Sherry.
Really?
Sherry Martel, yeah.
No way.
It's like, that's what she was doing. Yeah, you get a look at her face and it's, oh, that's her, you know.
Hold on, didn't they just bring her in because she's supposed to be, like, the best women's worker from the AWA?
No, that was Moolah.
And Dominic Cristiano.
And the Golden Girls.
Oh, God.
I feel so bad. They're gone now, that's it. No more Golden
no
Girls.
No more Golden Girls.
Oh, yeah. Alright, we get the third or fourth, like, turnbuckle count of the night. You know, the headbutts and the crowd count.
Yeah.
That was a staple in the 80s. Commentators wonder why Honky didn't do the shake, rattle, and roll in the middle of the ring. And we find out when they do it again 15 seconds later. And it's so Beefer can grab the ropes and block the move.
Yeah. Honky Tonk Man, like, he gets it. He spent the whole match working the crowd. Other than Hogan, this is probably the most they've been up for a match the whole night. There was a great atomic drop by the Beefer. He kept up Honky for ages. I thought that was pretty impressive. Honky just been a good heel. You know, every time that Beefer was getting it better, he'd run outside to Peggy Sue and Jimmy Hart. And I probably lied about the Hogan promo being the highlight of this show, because this was the highlight. There was a spot, I think it was in the top right turnbuckle, where Honky was doing some rope-a-dope, and Beefer was doing the fucking windmill. And I thought, I marked it, I want a clip of that. And it was amazing. I thought that was the high point of this match. It was great.
Alright, so the finish is when Beefer gets a sleeper on, and so Jimmy Hart clocks the ref from behind. Beefer runs down Jimmy Hart and cuts off his mutt as Peggy Sue wakes up Honky with a pail of water. So Beefcake wins by DQ, but Honky retains.
I thought the ending was totally overbooked and mental, but I thought that the strength of the character saved it. I thought it was entertaining.
This is all Honky Tonk.
Yeah.
Because yeah. Brutus Beefcake still didn't have
he
a clue.
He sold the sleeper so well. He, like, he was constantly grabbing at his arms. And yeah, I'm a huge honky mark.
Whenever I see Beefcake, I always think, if you can't wrestle well, you should at least have a strong gimmick. Yeah. And he does have a strong
gimmick. And he does, yeah.
There you go. And
he's
interesting attire.
Huge as well. He's a big guy. He's tall.
Got an impressive mullet as well.
he cut off Jimmy Hart's hair there.
Mullet? He cut off his mullet. Imagine all of the carnies in the back laughing at him because he's got no mullet.
A freak.
Okay, so backstage we've got Euchre with Andre the Giant, who...
Andre, is he?
And Peter Andre. Alright, where he talks about Hogan's, he fluffs his lines, but he says this was an intentional DQ. He said Hogan was going to be the next champion, right? So then we get the famous spot where he chokes Euchre, who comically oversells it, and I hate that shit. Because he was like, he rolled his eyes and he just
put out his tongue.
Yeah, so he's like Bugs Bunny or some shit.
Yeah.
I reckon Vince had to change his pants afterwards.
It's the type of thing where, you know, when it happened, you know, you'd probably be given out. But when you look back, it's very famous, like, you
yeah.
know. And would it be as famous if he sold it, like, real?
Well, like, because when he released the whole, he was like, you know, so.
Just, yeah, that's how people got choked back in the 80s.
All right, so we go to Greg the George with Jimmy Hart, Honky, and Peggy Sue, as Peggy Sue hides Jimmy Hart's mulletless head.
I don't have this.
Well, it wasn't very good.
Oh, okay.
They just basically recounted the finish, and that was it. I've still got the title, so there.
I'd love to hear another honky promo, that's all.
That was most embarrassing from our worldwide audience.
Look, I look like Lulu. Look at the back of my head.
Don't worry, Jimmy. Covered up. You don't let him see it. You cover your head up. Don't you ever let him see that, Jimmy Hart.
It's going to get hard over this.
Most embarrassing moment of anybody's life. The most embarrassing moment. Brutus and Barber will stoop to any lengths. Humiliating is not the word for it. Why don't you use some bigger and better adjectives than that? Cover it up, Jimmy. Don't let anybody see it. All I can tell you, Brutus and Barber, you did what you said you was going to do. You said you'd do some strutting and some cutting, but you did it on Jimmy Hart. You didn't do it on me. You didn't beat the honky-tonk man. You said you're going to put me to sleep. You did it, but you didn't win. I still got the belt. I'm still the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. I'm the greatest of all time. I'll get you for this, Barber.
Don't be sorry.
Let's get up to the ring.
All right, next we got the Islanders, those devils from the main event of Royal Rumble 88.
I'm still angry about that. I've never fast forward as much in my life.
Alright, the Islanders and Bobby Heenan versus the Bulldogs and Coco Beware. Bobby Heenan, oh, was awesome. He was wearing an attack dog jacket and pants.
I marked out to this. I thought this was genius.
They never said it, but this must have been that special delivery he got to his hotel room earlier.
Okay, right, right.
The Islanders dognapped Matilda December 8th, 1987, and was threatened with suspension by President Jack Tunney, and also got like thousands of fans' letters asking them to release Matilda.
That's great.
And so they did. And so this match was set up.
I love it. I loved how commentary team banged on for ages about how vicious this dog was. And it's like, you look at her sitting on her little pedestal at ringside, and she's like the most adorable, harmless little puppy dog ever. Like, I'm fucking great.
Anyway, Coco's pants, did you see what was on them?
No, I actually made a note.
Was it blurred?
That it was blurred.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Because it said WWF on it.
Yeah, it was blurred.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sucks.
I thought of it like, because he's some stupid like god or something. Don't worry that. That's right.
Alright, so we got a lovely headlock and leg scissors combination from Coco on both the Islanders. Ventura says, oh my god, this was the low point, which was the high point of the night for me, is Ventura says, Heenan looks like a Chinaman, doesn't he?
Oh, because of his get-up.
Because he had the long sleeves. You know, he had the brown
and
shirt.
The kind of buckles.
Yeah.
That is amazing. That is 80s, isn't it?
Racism was amazing in the 80s. It was all fair game. You would not get away with that, Jesus Christ. You would not get away with it. Monsoon makes the save by saying, yeah, he looks like anything but a wrestler. So, whoo! Crisis averted.
Just you talking about Monsoon making a save there, he actually kind of pulls one off at the opening of the whole show, which I forgot to say. when himself and Jesse are talking to Bob Uecker, and Uecker opens up the show saying by saying that when Vince rang me, I was so happy and I'd love to come back. And Monsoon was like, oh, let's move on. It was like they really didn't want to let the cat out of the bag about Vince being
in charge.
I thought, he's not a very good commentator, but he's great at keeping kayfabe.
They should have hired Mark Henry.
Though. Yeah.
Alright, so Heenan's deal is that he just come in and kick and punch opponents when they're down and get out ASAP.
It's exactly how it should be.
Yep.
There was a beautiful crucifix pin by Davey Boy at some point in the match. As I said, I actually thought Coco Beware looked good. Just not Hall of Fame good. The third highlight of this show. Did you see Coco's Hulk up?
No.
I want a clip of this as well.
Is it a Coco?
Oh, it's better than that. Someone was battering Coco. They had him, I think, in like a headlock, and they were punching him in the head. And you know when Hulk Hogan shakes and stomps his feet? Coco Beware for this Hulk up does the fucking slap, slap, like.
Did that get the crowd to cheer, did it?
No, not really.
Oh, that's a
it got me to cheer, like, I started marking out. It's fucking pathetic.
So when the crowd cheer, does he get a Coco Pop? So the finish of the match is when the Islanders double-team Coco and press-slam Heenan onto Coco for the three count. I love it.
Yep, it was great.
I was saying that, and then Ventura was like, I love it. I thought that was brilliant. No one saw that coming in Mania. And it was cool. It's like the heel, the cheesy, you know, chicken shit heel actually, you know, he never got his comeuppance.
Yeah.
He won, and then he ran away. So Davey Boy brings Matilda to chase the brain. He gets caught for a second.
I think this is the fourth highlight of the show.
Go on, take a shirt.
Oh, so fucking funny. Davey Boy grabs Matilda and he chases Bobby Heenan back down through the crowd, through the entranceway, and he has to literally throw the dog onto Heenan and pretend like she's biting him by moving the dog around. I thought it was amazing. It was so obvious that the dog is like, it just wants to do the prawn and like kind of clam up. It's terrified. Oh, I thought it was great.
Alright. So
the match was okay.
Yeah.
Not special.
No, I don't know. I hate the Islanders now. I just despise them since the Royal Rumble. I just want no part of the Islanders. Like, plus they can't talk and we get Heenan with other people, so there's absolutely no draw for me. Alright, so Fink brings our attention to Jesse Ventura, who gets up and poses for some reason.
Yeah, this was one of the low points of the show for me. It made no sense.
He did get a big initial pop and died down very quickly as well. Should only pose for a few seconds, but he kept it going. In the ring, Fink explains the Million Dollar Man got a bye, so he'll face the winner of a One Man Gang and Savage in the finals. So we go backstage and Heenan cuts a quick promo talking about how he survives. I would have talked about how he won the match, really.
I didn't have that either.
Really? Yeah, it wasn't great. But, you know, it's cool to see post-match promos. Alright, so we got the only semi-finals match, which is One Man Gang versus Savage with Liz, who are both now in black attire motif. So,
third change of the night. Yeah. It's still beautiful.
Yeah. So the storyline of this match is Savage is knackered, and One Man Gang slows the pace and controls the match. Savage is definitely the underdog in this match.
One Man Gang's offense was just kind of punch, kick, elbow crap. Wasn't very good. There was a couple of near falls actually, which perked fans up. Macho Man kept on pulling One Man Gang's beard.
That was great.
Which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's nothing else in this match.
So One Man Gang gets Slick's cane and uses it once without the ref seeing, and the ref DQs, oh my god, before he sees him using the cane. So he's like, he just has the foreign object, but he hasn't used it, but he calls for a DQ. Now, I wouldn't mind, but earlier in the fucking night, Hogan had the chair and used it on Andre's head and didn't get DQ'd straight away.
This is TNA booking, if you ask me. This is, we don't have set rules, we book to finish the suit, the match and feud.
Yeah.
It's lazy booking that really bothers me.
Yeah. This would smack of, what do you call it, different agents backstage booking different matches, and no one actually proofreads it at the end.
Yeah.
I think that's why TNA, definitely before Hogan, because it kind of slowed down a bit, but you've got 8 gimmick matches on a pay-per-view or on a show, is because people are only concerned with their own match, and so let's have a stipulation so our match sticks out.
Yeah.
Everyone did it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a failure to communicate. Anyway, so back to Vanna White and Mean Gene, and he reiterates the finals brackets.
Then Vanna leaves for ringside because she's like the special guest timekeeper or something. Bob Uecker just gets there and just misses her. Yeah, yeah. At least she didn't get raped.
Every cloud, you know. Alright, so we have the WWF Tag Team title match, which is Demolition versus Strikeforce, who are the champions, Rick Martel and Tito Santana. Now, Demolition come out to a fucking kick-ass song.
It's pretty cool.
I'm just going to play it. Stop.
Mr. Baseball was a bit confused, yes. He was confused when he played baseball.
This contest is for the World Wrestling Federation.
Some more gold on the line here. This World Wrestling Federation Tag Team matchup. For the gold, Mr. Fuji's Demolition, Action Smash.
Mr. Fuji.
They could make history, Jess, right here. Well, I went on record last week, Gorilla, and I predicted that they would beat Strikeforce. I think they're just too big, they're just too strong for the two pretty boy champions.
Well, they are indeed awesome, these two individuals, as they have literally rolled over everybody here in the World Wrestling Federation. They were dangerous when they first came here to the WWF, but then they fell under the tutelage of the Devious One, Mr. Fuji, and they became ultra dangerous. Take a look at that devious kisser.
Fuji has a look of determination in his eyes, definitely.
As we take a look at this 20,000 plus here in Atlantic City, Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino, the site for WrestleMania 4, where history is in the making. Oh, there it is. The champions are about to make their appearance.
And Strikeforce ruined the mood by coming out
to their music. Like, what was that all about?
Girls in Cars is the name of the song. Did you notice their attire, their Strikeforce? They have little lightning bolts on their right cheek. And on the left cheek, they have their own symbol. So Martel has a little Canadian flag. And Tito Santana has a Mexican hat.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not notice that. Did you hear how much guff Jesse Ventura gave Tito Santana in this match?
It's great.
He actually came out and said, you know, obviously this is a paraphrase, why don't you fuck off back to Mexico and start selling tacos again?
I love this when people have an axe grind with certain wrestlers.
Yeah.
At the start of the match, Gino ponders the legality of Demolition's outfit, much like Heenan's outfit earlier, because it has like sharp buckles and stuff.
That's not why I was confused about it. They look like gimps.
I think they look awesome.
Were they over?
They were hugely over.
How were they over?
They were awesome, that's all. Like, that wasn't supposed to be gimps. That was supposed
to be
cool.
I know, but they looked like gimps. You know what I mean? Were gimps cool in 88? Like, you know, because like Pulp Fiction hadn't happened yet.
Leather and studs. Leather and studs were like, yeah, they were really cool. That was all punk and stuff like that. Like
rhinestone cowboys.
No, it was awesome. Don't listen to him.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry.
They were amazing. There was a nice, the laziest but awesome heart attack that they did. Smash starts the match with giving loads of axe handle smashes to the opponent. I was like, yeah, it's brilliant.
Did the lads talk about that, or is that just you being super smart?
No, they mentioned it. They
really?
Mentioned the smashes.
That's awesome. It's Smash who's Repo Man, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, because his son wrestled on TNA Impact, Dakota Darso. He's not that good. He's very tall, though. Mm. So he'll obviously make it in the bed.
All right, so we get a flying forearm by Tito that Ventura quips. He learned it in the MFL, the Mexican Football League.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense if it was a shoulder tackle, I guess, but, you know. Oh, my God, we get the coldest hot tag. and the fans could not care less about Babyface Martel.
Yeah, they were dead, so was I.
God help him, he was working hard, he was bumping fast and doing lots of moves, but
I have to say, he actually did get some kind of a rise with him when he slapped on the Boston Crab, though.
Yeah, Boston Crab got it.
Yeah.
Tito tries to get Axe and Fuji out, but Axe gets Fuji's cane and hits Martel in the back of the head with it, allowing Smash to get the three and the tag titles.
Congratulations. I hated this match. This was toilet bread shit for me. Like,
really? I love Demolition.
I hated it. I thought the match was so bad. Another non-clean finish. So what was to become of Strikeforce? Did they break up or did they continue on for another couple of years?
Actually, shortly after this match, Tito Santana suffers a neck injury, so that's the end of them until next year.
Okay.
And they won't last long when they come back either. In WrestleMania, never mind.
No spoilers. This is live.
So we get an interview with Demolition and Fuji post-match with the belts. These green screen backgrounds, they're all home video exclusives, so they're not shown live, obviously, since you didn't get it. So
I didn't have any of these.
Then we get Robin Leach, who comes out with the WWF title on a red pillow.
Robin Leach, I'm bringing down the coveted World Wrestling Federation Championship belt. As it's come to this, Jess, we will have, in fact, an undisputed World Wrestling Federation champion.
And it'll either be the Macho Man Randy Savage or the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase.
Terrified.
Yeah.
Kids groping at it. He came up to, like, this lovely piano piece in, like, B minor or something. I don't know. It didn't fit. It didn't make sense.
Maybe it was on Lifestyles of Rich and Famous or something.
Or they're trying to make it seem like the crown jewel or something. You know, something ridiculous.
Better than it is. Yeah. So we get our guest ring announcer, who's Bob Uecker, and it's really funny when he comes out. There's some fan who's smoking and then gives him a big hug. Did you not see it?
No,
it's amazing. Someone gives him a big hug. He actually got onto the ramp. Like onto the rampway in front of him, hugged him, and then security got him. It was great.
Battered him, like,
he sold it well.
Did you hear the version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game he came out?
Oh, God.
He always speaks well of you.
No, he doesn't.
What's that all? It sounded like
using only instruments you can find in a toilet. Like.
What? Yeah, it was horrible. It was like something that Rob Harris would think. I wonder if there's anyone who's listening who doesn't know who Ralph Harris is, like, oh, wanna.
Oh, God.
Jesse Ventura ripped Uecker out of it when he was coming down to the ring. He done the motion for hitting the baseball, and, like, Ventura, quick as lightning, was like, oh, and he missed it. I thought he was great.
And then he introduces Banner White. It's a really bad one.
I think it's Vanna, but it's like, it sounds really funny. Because, you know, like, V is kind of like a sexy sounding syllable, and it's like, B is not, like.
Oh, it's so funny. So
he looked really rapey as well when she came to.
I think it's hungry eyes. Hungry eyes. So I was absolutely flabbergasted that Pat Patterson didn't get a payoff here, because he's renowned for trying to get himself into WrestleMania somehow to get a payoff.
That's true, actually, yeah.
But he wasn't one of the security. Alright, so we got the finals, finally, fuck me.
Oh, like 9 hours into this show.
Yeah, and the winner will get the WWF title. We got Ted DiBiase with Andre versus Macho Man with Liz, who are now both wearing white attire.
Yeah, a great fourth change of gear. Liz still looked great. Did you hear Uecker absolutely butchered Ted's entrance? I'm shocked that this is the final of the world title tournament, and it's been a long show, but the crowd are so dead.
Yeah,
they don't give a fucking shit.
Like, this is the first pay-per-view to use two VHS cassettes, you know? It's the double box set or whatever, 2 hours on each. But I reckon this is also to test out, can they handle 4 hours as well?
Yeah.
No. Andre trips Macho twice, which goes undetected, so that was pretty cool. Macho sends Liz to the back, and she comes back with Hogan, just like Saturday Night's Main Event, where they form the Mega Powers.
Yeah, massive pop as well for this. The only time the crowd even rustled during this match was chanting for Hogan after Andre tripped up Macho Man.
God, that makes me sad. That means that Hogan's right.
Yeah.
He's right to steal the spotlight.
In a way, yeah.
But then you could also say that he's stealing the spotlight, not letting anyone else defy, so of course no one's going to cheer for anyone else.
It's double-edged, really, isn't it?
Quite unfair, because Fathead, Ed Leslie, what's his name, Brutus Beefcake, earlier in the night, used the sleeper hold as his finisher.
Yes.
And Ted DiBiase also uses the sleeper hold. But
it's more of a chicken wing, almost.
I was thinking, is that like a Tasmanian?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Because he's actually hooking
and the sleeper is like a weird naked choke.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Hogan gets in and gives a chair shot to the back of DiBiase. That's very dangerous, mate. But Hulk Hogan doesn't get DQ'd for a chair shot.
I was furious watching this. This makes no sense. Why would the biggest face in the company heel out on a heel to help a face?
Because he's such mates with him. He just wants him to win so badly.
Two faces teaming up to cheat the heel. It's like two wrongs make a bigger wrong, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It really bugged me, like.
I reckon this is Hogan's, like, oh, I have to do something in the main event.
Why not, like, why could Hogan not come down and destroy Andre and brawl to the back and let Macho get the clean win, like?
No, fuck Macho.
You know what I mean?
This is my night.
Oh,
I haven't even celebrated yet.
This and Mania 9.
So, yeah, Hogan does a chair shot to the back of DiBiase, then Macho Man gets the elbow drop and gets the three and wins the belt, where Hogan runs out and gets him the belt. At least Hogan and Savage are mates, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a reason for Hogan to be around.
I understand that, like, by Hogan even being mates with Savage and being in the ring, it kind of elevates him, but it's just, the booking, it's like, you've got a dead crowd. They've been through, like, what, there's been 15 matches so far, probably 12, 13 of them have been unclean finishes, and this is your big finish. I just really wish Hogan had a battered Andre, can have Macho get the clean win, and then they can celebrate. Took me two seconds to think of that.
I imagine that they're just really trying to push them being friends, but it angered me a lot. I was like, is Hogan's theme tune going to play here? Are they going to stop Macho's theme?
Oh.
You know? Because it wasn't too bad, but honestly, fuck off, Hogan.
Yeah.
This is Macho's night, you know?
Overall, I thought that this was one of the better matches of the night. It was due to A, Macho, B, strength of the characters involved in the match, and the fact that the rest of the card was balls.
Yeah.
So, pretty much that was three reasons. But it was a good match, but like I said, terrible booking to have Hogan use the chair. Thought that the final shot with Liz on Macho's shoulder, crying with the title on her shoulder, and Hogan pointing at them, I thought that was amazing. I thought that was great.
Cool. All right, let's head to the aftermath. Hogan, he must be the most selfish wrestler in history. Everyone's moment has to be his moment.
Think of someone who's more selfish than him? Maybe Shawn back in the day? Like, no, Shawn wasn't as bad as Hogan, was he?
I think, like, I wouldn't call Hogan a cunt from, like, WrestleMania 1 to 3, because he is the show.
Yeah.
You know, but afterwards, when he's not the show and other people are trying to be pushed, but he's still taking over,
That's
the cunt period. Like, with Shawn, he was it when it comes to WWF. If he left for WCW, there'd be no WWF. Like, they would have been fucked without him, because they didn't have anyone else, really, except for my boy.
Except for your boy! In that year.
Honestly, Shawn was the best in the ring and on the mic, so I can't blame him for being a cunt. You get a pass if you're the best ever.
Yeah, fair enough.
I will tell you, the original plans when Hogan was going to drop out to film No Holds Barred, DiBiase was set to win the tournament and the WWF title.
Really?
Yeah, he was going to win. What was going to happen is Savage was going to regain the IC title belt from Honky, But Honky said, fuck you, you're not taking the belt off me. If you take the belt off me, I'm going to grab it and I'm going to go to NWA.
That's great.
And Vince shot his cocks and said, alright, yeah, fair enough.
Really?
It's really weird, but you'll keep... So if Honky jobbed, he'd take the IC title with him to the NWA. Everything going well, Macho Man would have won the IC title, then dropped it. Then he would have faced DiBiase for the world title at SummerSlam. So DiBiase would have actually gotten a proper run.
Yeah.
It's a bit sad, I feel sad about that.
Ted DiBiase, you know, it's a crying shame that he's never, like, had a world champion.
Yeah, they did, like, renege on his week in house shows, like, you know, they just struck that from the record book, so officially he hasn't been champion. And Dolph Ziggler has.
Really?
Yeah, that's still in there. He's been world champion for 7 minutes.
Nice.
Do you remember when Vicky was getting shit, man?
I do remember.
Alright, so, yeah, let's do a bit of housekeeping. WrestleMania 4, March 27, 1988, from Trump Plaza Hotel and Casino, from Atlantic City, New Jersey. Attendance was 18,165. Your announcers were Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. You know, if we ever do 97, I'd say that the storylines are good, but the wrestling, in-ring wrestling, was abysmal until you got to 99 and 2000 with Benoit, Jericho and all those.
Yeah.
But, this pay-per-view was awful.
Yeah.
This was worse than Mania 2, was it? Because it was more annoying. Yeah. If you have one good match on the card, you can focus in on that.
It really drives up the overall rating of a show. It's like Mania 3. That's not a good show. But, you've got Steamboat Savage, which more than carry the rest of the show.
And Hogan Andre.
Yeah.
And all of the matches were 10 minutes or something, so you got a storyline.
It's like Mania 25, you know. That show sucks. But then you've got Shawn Taker. So it takes it from a 4, a 3 out of 10 to, like an 8 out of 10 nearly, Because that match is so good.
Mm.
It actually goes a long way to proving the point that you can have a really bad pay-per-view despite none of the matches being truly horrible. Because, they were too short to be truly horrible. But there was no match that was very good. Good might have been the best
the main event,
that you got out of it. So, if your whole show, there's no peaks and troughs. It's just, it's just a fucking plateau. So, I didn't enjoy the show. There was nothing really to get behind. There was no epic matches, nothing great. So,
yeah.
Well, obviously it couldn't have been a success if they've never done a one-night tournament for the belt again at Mania. Like, it got thrown in the Attitude Era where belts changed every month.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually.
Probably, the
game? Yeah.
I don't know if it drew well.
Probably everything drew well back in the Attitude Era.
Then again, WWE didn't hit its peak until 99, right? Like, it didn't really start going mental until 99, right?
Well, yeah, they were very high in 99, but, I think WrestleMania 14 in 98 was the first big one, and then it kind of continued getting high next.
That's not a great show.
No, but with...
better than 4, though. Better than 4.
With Mike Tyson, you bring in the buyers. Sure, that's what Mania's always been about.
Yeah.
You can see it here. Look at these schlocks they're getting into with nothing roles in Mania. It's always been about celebrity endorsement.
Vanna and Trump and...
Yeah. It's always been about pouring yourself out to get mainstream media.
That's true.
And fuck the actual wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. And, people that give out about Snooki being on last year's show, it's like, it's not that bad. It's only one in a 3-minute match. You go back and watch Mania 2. That, someone with Ozzy and Alice Cooper. God.
This is what Mania is like.
Yeah.
It's the celebrity endorsement show, so.
Yeah.
And it works. It gives it their biggest...
Works, yeah.
Biggest payday of the year, so, they're right to do so.
Yeah.
All right, so it's time for the Wrestling is Awesome segment. Did you like it?
It was amazing. I loved how awesome it was.
I haven't even picked it out yet.
You see, it is fucking funny.
Wrestling is awesome!
Awesome!
Cowabunga!
The last vial of ooze! He
must have drank all of it.
It's a super shredder.
Whoa! Great! Now what are we supposed to do?
This thing can't take much more. There's not all that stuff on top.
Shredder, you gotta listen to reason.
Yeah.
You're gonna destroy us all.
And so be it.
You okay? So don't forget, we're turtles!
Okay, so that's WrestleMania 4 in the books. Next time on OSW Review, we will be reviewing the first ever SummerSlam. SummerSlam 1988. So we'll see. Oh, you're gonna love it.
I can't wait.
It's, do you want to know the main event?
Yes.
It's the Mega Powers, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage versus the Mega Bucks, DiBiase and Andre the Giant.
I love it. I love it. It's going to be great. Also going to be a hard night for DiBiase.
True. True. Alright, so okay, so we'll wrap it up. So for me, Jay Hunter and V1,
take care.
Spike your hair.
Lyrics, fill in the gap. Drop that bass and get the ninja rap. Just feel it, if you know what I mean. Give it up for the heroes in green. Just flowing, smooth with the power. Taking it up hour after hour. Cause in this life there's only one winner. You better aim quick, you can hit the center. In it to win it with a team of four Ninja Turtles that you got at the door. It's Ninja, Ninja Rap. Ninja, Ninja Rap. Ninja, Ninja Rap. Go, 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 go. Go Ninja, go Ninja, go. Go Ninja, go Ninja, go.
Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go, 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 go.